Our study tonight is out of Jeremiah chapter 48, verses 18 to 28, God's judgment on Moab's belittling of God and his people. Psalm 11c in the English Standard Version notes that the blessing of the man who does not scoff, that is, who does not ridicule or belittle other people. The sin of belittling others, especially if it involves scoffing God or ridiculing his people, is repulsive to the Lord. Jeremiah 48, 18 to 28 calls for God's judgment on Moab for this very sin. So we view it for our insight. I want to read the verses and then we'll look at them. Jeremiah 48, 18 through 28. Thou daughter that dost inhabit Dibon, come down from thy glory and sit in thirst, for the spoiler of Moab shall come upon thee, and he shall destroy thy strongholds. O inhabitant of Aroer, stand by the way and espy. Ask him that fleeth and her that escapeth and say, what is done? Moab is confounded, for it is broken down. Howl and cry, tell Yed and Arnon that Moab is spoiled. And judgment has come upon the plain country, upon Holon, upon Jahaza, and upon Mepha'ah, from Dibon, from Nebo, and upon Beth Diblathaim, upon Kirithaim, and upon Beth Gamul, and upon Beth Meon, upon Kerioth, upon Bozra, and upon the cities of the land of Moab, far or near. The horn of Moab is cut off, and his arm is broken, saith the Lord. Make ye him drunken, for he magnified himself against the Lord. Moab also shall wallow in his vomit, and he shall also be in derision. For was not Israel a derision unto you? Was he found among thieves? For since thou spakest of him, thou skippest for joy. O ye that dwell in Moab, leave the cities, dwell in the rock, and be like the dove that maketh her nest in the sides of the hole's mouth. Okay, we'll look at this. We'll have to retranslate some of this. The city of Dibon, a great city in Moab, it was a capital city where the archaeologically famous Moabite stone was discovered, that told of Moab's defeat of Israel during the reign of Mesha, king of Moab, was predicted by Jeremiah to humble herself because the destroying invader was coming upon her to destroy her strongholds and her city. The inhabitants of Roer were told to stand by the road to watch and ask the people fleeing past them what had occurred. The answer would be that Moab had been put to shame, that the nation had been broken so that the Moabites were to wail and cry. Of course, news that Moab had been laid waste would be told as far away as Aroer by the Arnon River. That's actually on the border of Moab. So the cities of the Transjordan Plateau in Moab that would be destroyed are listed in Jeremiah 48, 21, and 24, including Holon, Jatsa, Mepha'ath, Dibon, Nebo, Beth Diblathaim, Kirithaim, Beth Gamul, Beth Meon, Kerioth, and Bozra. His point in naming these 11 cities was to show that all the towns of Moab, both far and near, would be destroyed so that no one in Moab would be unaffected. In other words, when the enemy came through, and it, we find out from secular history later that it was the Arabs from Saudi Arabia came in and just ransacked the place, just leveled everything. So that nobody was going to escape. Everybody in all the towns is going to get it. Now, two symbols of strength in that culture of that day were one's horn and one's arm. They're used by Jeremiah in verse 25 to show that Moab's strength would be obliterated, his horn being cut off and his arm being broken. Now, the reasons given for this judgment of Moab's loss of strength are provided in Jeremiah 48, 26, and 27 as follows. God called for Moab to be made drunk, for the nation had magnified itself against the Lord, in essence, ridiculing Israel's God, so that Moab figuratively would be made drunk and have to wallow in her vomit caused by drunkenness, the object of ridicule by others in just judgment. Then the Lord rhetorically asked Moab if she had not treated Israel as an object of ridicule, if she had not treated her with contempt. With the contempt one had been caught among thieves, that when the Moabites spoke of Israel, they wagged their heads, a cultural practice of scorning another party. Actually, this is something that matches in our culture today. when somebody has done something and we think, and you see the person shaking their head like that, it can be a signal of scorn, but it was definitely in the culture of that particular time. Accordingly, the Moabites were directed to leave their cities and humbly dwell on the rock, to be like the dove that nests in the sides of the mouth of a gorge in humiliation, as if ridiculed by others. Well, what I decided to do, we actually have the text of the Moabite stone translated for us in the Zondervan Pictorial Encyclopedia. And in viewing that text of the Moabite stone that was found at Dibon, Moab's ridiculing contempt becomes abundantly clear. So I thought I would quote it. Speaking of his victory over the house of Israel's king Omri, this was some time before, King Mesha stated in the Moabite stone, quote, I triumphed over him and over his house, while Israel has perished forever. Now, that's not true. He's stretching the line because Israel didn't perish forever. But he was boasting. Then Mesha added, now the men of Gad, that's one of the tribes of Israel, had built Ataroth for themselves. But I fought against the town and took it, slaying all the people of the town as a satiation for Chemosh, that's their false god in Moab. I brought back from there Oriel, its chief, another translation of that would be the altar hearth of David, and dragged him before Chemosh in Keriot. Now Moab's king Mesha added, Chemosh said to me, go seize Nebo from Israel. So I went up by night, fought against it from daybreak to noon, and took it, slaying everyone, 7,000 men, boys, women, girls, and maidservants, for I had consecrated it to Ashtar Chemosh. It's one of their gods. Now, notice what he said against Israel's god Yahweh. King Mesha added, quote, and I took from there the vessels of Yahweh, hauling them before Chemosh. Now, what they would do in the ancient Near East, if you had defeated another people, you would take that people's instruments belonging to that god, the holy vessels and so forth, and bring them and put them in front of your god, demonstrating that god had been defeated by your god. That's why your people are defeated. So he's doing this to belittle God in front of his god, Chemosh. And of course, remember what happened when the Ark of the Covenant was brought in before by the Philistines into their god, and God took that idol and knocked it down. And so they learned in a hurry. Well, here's this Moabite god, king, doing that to God. Now, what's interesting, the name Yahweh actually appears on the Moabite stone. According to liberal theology, the name Yahweh would not have been known outside of the southern country of Judah at this time, because they felt Yahweh was something, a name for God that was invented only out of Judah at a later period of time. So the very fact that the name Yahweh appears here by a foreign king in Moab indicates the name Yahweh was around a lot earlier than what the liberal theologians have said. So this really does a death knell to liberal theology in a dramatic way. But there it is. It's right in the Moabite script. It's right on the stone. So it's a kind of an exciting find from that perspective. But anyway, for belittling Israel's God and people, the Moabites were judged of God to experience judgment by which they would be made objects of the scorn they had administered against God and his people. The Moabite king's Moabite stone actually cites this belittling of Israel's God and people, what brought judgment upon Moab. So, in application, may we realize that God is to be honored, never ridiculed. For he is a great king who demands that all men, including the Gentile nations, honor him. In Malachi 1:14, God critiques the people of Israel. He said, you know, why are you bringing me animals that are lame, which is in violation of the law, or animals that have hernias and whatnot? Try giving that to your governor. See if he'll like it. And of course, a governor wouldn't take it at all. And then God says, for I'm a great king, and I'm going to be honored by all the nations of the world. Bring the proper sacrifice to me. This bothers me. Every now and then I hear people say, you know, when there's a child that dies or something, I don't understand. Why would God let that happen? That actually is a critique of God. That's actually very dangerous. We We have to be very careful. God knows what he's doing. Whether we understand him or not is not the point. Job recognized that he didn't understand why he was suffering the way he was when he really wasn't that bad of a sinner. He had no idea that he was the object of a competition between God and Satan. And of course, God couldn't tell him that he was an object of competition because then the competition would be off. And Job would have known the facts and he could have reacted properly. But God, he has his reasons for doing what he does and for allowing what he does. So we dare not challenge God. Number two, may we realize that every human being is made in the image of God. In Genesis 1:26, it says God created them male and female, created he them in their image. So the word image has to mean something more than just a physical image, because the physical image of a man and a woman obviously are different. The image there carries with it the connotation of in the pattern of God, and most scholars believe that since man has will, emotion, and intellect, I think it is, that those three qualities make man unique from the animal kingdom, and those qualities God also has, then any person that has will, intellect, and emotion is in the image of God. So anyway, whether it's a man or a woman, they're in the image of God. And this is true, incidentally, we talk about people of different races. There's actually only one human race. Answers in Genesis has pointed out that you can take sometimes people, Africans, down in Zimbabwe, and they are a perfect match for organ donation to somebody up in Sweden. Now, that wouldn't happen if we had evolved in different races and so forth. We'd have to be one race, otherwise that would be impossible. But it's true. That actually happens. So we have to recognize every human being is made in the image of God, regardless what ethnicity they're from, what they classify as race, which is actually they're all one race anyway, but nevertheless, regardless of the color of the skin and so forth. So all men must be honored. In fact, this is what caused Abraham Lincoln to change his mind in the Civil War about releasing his slaves. He read in Scripture that man was created in the image of God. He knew the black man was created in God's image too, because he had wills and emotion just like other people. So he said, wait a minute, we have to honor the black man just like the white man. And that was a big step for Lincoln. So that's one of the main reasons why he decided to go with the Emancipation Proclamation, which is an amazing step at that time. So we must honor every person. In fact, 1 Peter 2:17a says, honor all men, owe no man anything but to honor all men. And then three, if we have ridiculed other people in any way, may we confess it as sin before the Lord, lest he cause us to be ridiculed in just discipline for our sin. The value of every human being is that every human being is made in the image of God. So a sin done against another human being is a sin that is done against someone in the image of God, and God takes that personally. This is why murder of another human being or rape or kidnapping is a capital offense, because that's a sin basically against God. And so capital punishment is entirely punitive. It was never designed to be something that inhibited further crime, although invariably it often does. But it's punitive simply because man is in the image of God, or woman is in the image of God. So a crime against them is actually a crime against God himself. So we have to be very, very careful. Whether this person is a small child, we have to be very, very careful. They're in the image of God. We have to honor them and protect them. So hopefully this gives us some direction for how we relate to other people. Some people are hard to love from our perspective because of all sorts of reasons. There are all sorts of reasons, but nevertheless, when we remember that all people are made in the image of God, then hopefully it modifies our viewpoint of them and changes the way we treat them so that we honor them.